Hello, Twim Nation.
Hi.
This is the Twim Sisters. We are about an hour late getting started from when we originally wanted to, but we did both have Relief Society activities tonight, and then we're still just technical idiots when it comes to trying to figure out this computer stuff.
We struggle.
We really do. It's really a good thing that we don't have to like edit and post it on like other sites, and that we have Jeff to do that for us, because it might never happen.
Yes, it's true. Anyways, we're happy to be back. I'm Ariane Hales. And
I'm Tiffany Hales. And
Ariane Smith.
Ariane Hales Smith.
You've got me going by my main name again,
because
I'm so used to you saying it.
Yeah, it's very true.
Anyway, so we are twin sisters.
We are twin sisters, and we survived the month of May.
We did.
You may recall in our last broadcast, we talked about, and broadcast/podcast, we talked about how the month of May for moms is a marathon and not a sprint. And I don't know about you. I was like literally crawling to the finish line. In fact, May 30th, I just had like an emotional breakdown, and it didn't even like dawn on me that it was because it was the end of May. And then the next morning after, you know, I had my little breakdown because just May was so overwhelming. The next morning I'm watching the Today Show and it says it's May 31st. I was like, well, no wonder I fell apart last night. It was the second to the last day of May, but you know what? It's June now. Life is good.
Yes, we made it. I have a baby.
You have the most exciting news in May. Ariane is no longer pregnant.
I'm not pregnant anymore.
All right. Well, you better give him a little, you better tell him a little bit about the baby.
Well, we have our baby. He's a boy. He's great. We love him. He's so sweet, so cute. We're so happy to have him. We got him 3 weeks early. We're thrilled to have him for those extra 3 weeks. My girls, I have three older girls. They're obsessed with him. He has a built-in fan club. They will not leave the child alone. I think he's going to have
face issues.
He might need to go to counseling someday.
Well, between his three older sisters and his aunt, I have officially told my husband and my sons, they've been replaced. I've got a new boyfriend in my life, and he's about 7 pounds, and he's really cute.
So he's great. He's great. We love him. I have to say, the funniest thing, like, I just thought this was hysterical, because we have said on here before that, like, once I found out I was pregnant with a boy, we were like, okay, Boy Scouts and the church.
Oh, yeah.
You have 8 years to break up before my boy turns 8. So the day we brought him home from the hospital, we're just sitting at home, snuggling the baby. My husband is, like, checking his phone, like, news updates. Yeah. And he's like, oh, my gosh. And I knew exactly what it was. He was like, this is huge. And I was like, is it a church thing? And he's like, this is huge. I was like, it's Boy Scouts.
They broke up. The church and Boy Scouts broke up.
So I kind of just felt like it was a little like welcome home for me. Like,
you're bringing your baby boy home, and now you never have to do Scouts.
That is already taken off the table.
Exactly.
I won't have to be a pack mom someday.
Exactly.
I won't have to sew patches on.
Nope.
I won't have to. Anyways, I was a little bit happy, to say the least. It was kind of like the cherry on top of like everything.
You know, I think you can thank our mother Hertha from the other side. You know, she's just going, oh, you popped out a fourth kid. Let's pray for a little Boy Scout breakup for you.
So the timing was quite excellent for my family. But
yes, it will. So,
you know, should he choose to do Boy Scouts outside of the church? Great. But
yeah, I don't really see that happening.
I'm saying it's a great program outside the church, but I'm thrilled that it will not be.
I am very anxious to see what they come up with for the you know, for this new program that is going to replace both the girl programs as well as the boy programs. Mm-hmm. And this is my theory. Okay, this is strictly Tiffany 101. I have no inside information. I'm just theorizing. So they're getting rid of Scouts. They're getting rid of Duty to God, and they're getting rid of Personal Progress. So I think they are going to have a book, like a communal book that both the boys and the girls use. and that there's going to be crossover topics for both of them. And then they will have little side sections that maybe have, you know, one thing that is specific to priesthood holders, and then another thing that is specific to the girls, and maybe only once a month they meet separately, but they're all going to be working on this together. Mm-hmm. That's just Tiffany 101.
It would make sense. So. It would make sense. So yeah, I'm excited to see what they come up with.
Yes.
So we'll see. That's way far out a ways in the future.
Well, 18 months, you know, I mean, yeah. For you, the boy aspect of it is far in the future, but you know, 18 months and
right.
I'm guessing maybe 6 months before the finish, they'll start to roll it out and sneak peek it. So
very exciting.
Very exciting.
But yeah, it's been a great month for us. We're loving this baby. Everybody has been so generous and so sweet and just loving and ministered. I feel so ministered.
You feel ministered too. Explain to our listeners how the ministering program has worked in your life since the baby.
Yes. You know, when you have a baby in the church, like, I just love to hear different experiences with this, but when you have a baby in the church, you get meals, right?
You get meals.
Okay. So it cracks me up. My husband thinks this is a sexist policy. Of the church.
A reverse sexism policy.
Because her husband is a very good cook.
I have never thought about that before.
I know. He's a very good cook. And he wasn't always. This is a talent and a skill that he's taken time to develop since we've gotten married. He really could hardly cook anything when we got married.
Well, and he enjoys it. This is not a skill out of necessity. This is something that he enjoys.
He likes to cook. I will fully admit his skills have surpassed mine.
Hey, there is no shame in that.
Not that I'm great. It's not like there's like some high standard to live up to. But he's way better than me. So he's so funny. And he did this. He always does this. Like last time we had a baby, I remember him complaining about the same thing. Why do they think we need meals? I am an excellent cook. That is sexist to think the husband can't cook you a meal.
Okay, you know why? He has a very valid point. True. It is. It's kind of a sexist thing.
It is true. And he was so funny when he always is cooking things for the people he home teaches. And he is always like, how come they never ask the elders to like bring a meal or do something like that? Anyway. He's a very good cook, and he, like, always jokes about this. And I, on the other hand, am like, you are a wonderful cook, but if we wait for you to cook from when you get home from work, we probably won't eat dinner till, you know, 7 or 8 at night. And I am grateful for any help I can get, so I am more than willing to accept the lovely meals from Relief Society.
Fair enough.
Anyway, we felt just, like, people were so kind. I mean, besides, like, I don't know what your ward standard is, but like you think our ward, they do like kind of three meals is the standard when you have a baby or when you have, you know, depending on the needs. And then just beyond that, we just had so many sweet friends that brought a meal like 2 weeks later.
Oh,
like great neighbors across the street who aren't LDS, but are wonderful Christian people. And they brought us a meal like a week or two later. And like, I literally did not cook for 2 weeks after this baby was born.
Oh, nice.
Between meals brought to us and leftovers.
Well, and you had done some freezer meals beforehand.
Uh-huh. And I've hardly even touched those.
Really?
People have just been so sweet to us. I mean, even tonight, it's 4 weeks out. And just a sweet sister from the ward came and dropped off just a dessert and a little baby gift. And my girls were so excited. They just thought it was so sweet. So people are so, I just feel
that's nice.
So grateful for all the help. It's hard to have a baby, and it's hard to have a baby in May.
Exactly. I mean, this poor kid hit the ground running. Uh-huh. Like, you know, had the kid and you were like, okay, we've got school activities. So buckle up, buddy, for the ride.
Yep.
But I have to say, he is a really, really good, good baby. Rarely fusses.
He's been great.
He loves his pacifier. Mm-hmm. This baby's a little unusual for us because your prior babies and my babies, like we have big babies, like 8.5 to 9 pound babies.
Right.
And he came into this world at a little over 7 pounds.
Which is totally average, but not for us. So he feels so little.
He does. He feels so little. It's the tiniest little chicken legs and they're so cute.
So it's been a great, great month around here.
Yes.
So now month of May has been serious
month
prep time for month, Trek.
Yes,
Trek. You are down to like less than a month.
I am down to
what do you have, 2 weeks?
Let's see. I have, so we leave on the 21st. I've got 2 weeks. 2 weeks from tomorrow. Is that right? Yeah, I've got 2 weeks from tomorrow.
Wow.
Holy cow.
So exciting.
So
you've been hiking and walking.
I have been hiking. They sent us an email out about 60 days beforehand saying, you know, if you haven't gotten your little heinies off the couch, you might want to do that. And so I started walking. I have I had a hill that I walked up every day, and I've gotten some conditioning in. And then there's a gentleman in our ward, and he and his wife are Ma's and Pa's. And he was the trail master 4 years ago, so he knows the trail at Trek really well. Mm-hmm. And so last week, he led us on 2 hikes. And then last night, he led us on another hike. He's leaving with his family to go to Nauvoo, so I'm kind of on my own, like, for the next couple of weeks. But he did certify me last night as Trek ready.
Oh, yay!
I don't know if I really believe that, but, you know, he assures me I'm going to do fine.
I'm sure he wouldn't give you false hope. You will survive.
So
you're going to do great.
Anyway, so in addition to all the physical preparation for Trek, all of the hiking, and I definitely have noticed a huge difference in my endurance and my ability, and I know it's still going to be like physically really, really hard for me, but I have less fear of being buried in a shallow grave on the trail than I did about 6 weeks ago. So, you know, anyway,
that's good.
So in addition to that preparation, so they gave us a challenge. It's called the Rise Up Challenge that we are supposed to do before Trek. So we're supposed to, the first one is faith, and we're supposed to take a research and take a family name to the temple.
Okay.
Hey, my kids have done that. I haven't exactly done that yet. Because when I'm in the temple, I have a laundry assignment every week. So that's been a little more challenging. Sacrifice something you enjoy. Okay, I haven't really done that one yet either.
Oh, you got to get on it.
I know I got to get on it. I'm thinking of tying that in with President Nelson's talk, and we'll talk about that in a little while.
Okay.
So the perseverance, the exercise at least 4 to 6 weeks in advance.
You got that.
I got that one. History story to share. I'm good on that. Mm-hmm. Every night when I go to bed, I'm on Family Search and I'm reading all sorts of family history stories. And then joy, we're supposed to read the talk from President Elder Oopdorf, Three Sisters.
Oh, that's a good talk.
So I still have to read that talk. But the most important thing I have done is decorated my Trek bucket.
Oh.
So on Trek, you get this 5-gallon bucket. And so all of your personal stuff, except for your sleeping bag, has to fit in this 5-gallon bucket. And then the bucket goes in your cart. They call the sleeping bags and the tents and all that stuff separately. But the bucket goes in your cart.
So is decorating a bucket standard? Or are you going above and beyond?
No. Most of the kids are encouraged to decorate their bucket.
Okay.
In our ward, they did it as a specific mutual night. And they had, you know, tape and all sorts of, you know, duct tape and things like that you could decorate your bucket with. Uh-huh. I did not show up for that night because I kind of had my own plans for my bucket. Uh-huh. So let me just show you all, and I'll explain to the listening audience what I did over Memorial Day weekend, because I've got my bucket right here. So this is my Trek bucket. I may have to stand back a little bit.
Bucket.
So these are my ancestors, because I am taking my ancestors on Trek. So I've got 5 generations here. This side of the bucket is my mom's side. So I've got my mom, and then my grandparents, and they move up, and each generation gets a different color. This side of the bucket is my dad's side of the family. Except I did find out that this picture right here is incorrect. This is apparently Grandma Ison and her second husband, which I have tagged as my Bunderson great-grandparents. So I've got to fix that picture before Trek.
You're going to offend the relatives.
Well, according to my aunt, Grandma Louie here is probably pretty excited to be on both sides of the bucket, but I got to get back in the good graces with Grandma and Grandpa Bunderson and get their pictures on here.
Yes.
So yes, my ancestors.
Ooh, look at your buffalo plaid.
I got buffalo plaid on here.
And there's like glitter on it. This is fancy.
Yes. So I glued these on, and then of course and Mod Podged over the pictures. And I used the glitter Mod Podge because I have classified myself as the Trek Princess. And so the Trek Princess's bucket is going to be glittery. And so that's why it has the glitter Mod Podge on it. The other thing that I did is I did not use a standard lid. This is a screw-on lid. Because the standard lids are like really hard to get on and off.
Right, you have to
pry. So I went and bought my own screw-on lid. It just screws on and off like this. And so that makes it really easy to get in and access your bucket.
Oh, those are fancy.
Now, let me explain to you what this is inside my bucket.
There's more, folks.
There's more, folks. This is the pad that will go inside... That will go inside my bucket. I don't want to block the microphone here. It will go inside my bucket. And when I'm sitting on my bucket, because your bucket is your chair for the 2 or 3 days, I will put the pad on the lid like this so that the Trek Princess has a nice comfy cushion to sit on Trek. So,
oh, that's funny. So in the bucket goes like all your clothes.
Yes. So in the bucket will be change of clothes, any medications, deodorant, extra socks, you know, whatever it is you feel necessary to bring on Trek goes inside your bucket.
Have you tried fitting all your stuff in yet?
Oh, I have not.
Is this going to be a problem?
Probably. So, in fact, my daughter said to me, Lauren said to me, she said, Mom, you are going to be so overpacked for Trek. And I said, the Trek Princess is never overpacked. Everyone else is simply underpacked.
Your Trek family might revolt having to haul your stuff in the handcart.
So here's what I'm thinking.
Better be careful.
So I'm going to have my stuff in the bucket. And then I think I'm going to make myself a satchel. And I will have like extra stuff in the satchel. And I'll just carry the satchel.
Like a fanny pack?
No, like a go over your shoulder type of a satchel.
Okay.
It's kind of what I'm thinking I'm going to make. And so in there, like I'll have, you know, like my chapstick and my water bottle and sunglasses and that stuff that I'll want to access like daily on the trail. So.
Right.
Anyway, when we return in July, I'm sure that I will have a spare no detail.
Oh, I can't wait to hear.
Summary of the Trek experience.
I really can't wait to hear how this goes.
You are not the only one. There are a few people who are a little concerned. Will the Trek Princess make it or not? I already told my husband, I said, let's be clear on something. Trek Princess is not touching the handcart until the woman's pull. That is your job and the Trek children's job. Trek Princess will be lucky to walk up the mountain, let alone push the handcart.
The kids are supposed to be doing it anyways, right?
Exactly. This is them. This is their Trek experience.
You're just there to chaperone.
Exactly.
Make sure they don't make out.
That's exactly right. Or engage in other nefarious activities. We might have had a little nefarious activity 4 years ago, but I can't really go into detail about that.
Oh.
Yeah.
Scandal.
A little word of wisdom issue.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Anyway, so yes, that's what I have been doing is full on blown, all guns blazing Trek preparation.
Yes. Okay. Well, we can look forward to that in July.
You can look forward to the summary of Tiffany's Trek experience in July.
All right. Well, should we do some Mormon news stories?
Let's do some Mormon news stories. Okay.
I feel like there hasn't been as much the past. It's been a little quiet.
It's been quiet.
Beginning of summer.
Yes.
Just compared to, we had so many like crazy stories for such a long time there. But
look, we have a question live on Facebook.
Oh.
Christina asked, how many days is your trek? That's a very legitimate question. So we leave at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Thursday. We're up there all day Thursday, all day Friday. And then I think we'll get back about 6 o'clock in the evening on Saturday. So it's a good solid 3 days. It's 21 miles total. So it's about 7 miles a day.
So two nights.
Two nights.
3 days.
3 days, okay. Two nights. The first day is one of the harder ones because apparently the first day is like pretty much all uphill. We're going from mountain level or from meadow level up to the tree line. So we're going to climb several thousand feet in the first day.
So does that mean day two is downhill?
Well, no. No. Day two is more like, just kind of staying up in the tree line area, except day two has the women's pull.
Oh.
And
and that'll be on a hill, right? They always make you go up a hill.
The women's pull is actually, you go up a hill, down a hill, down a hill and then up another hill.
Okay.
It's intense. Honestly, that is what I am most concerned about with Trek is the women's pull. So I have been actively recruiting people that I know are going on Trek that are not assigned to families to come help me with the women's pull.
That's awesome. You got like the cooks.
Well, you know, our bishop's wife, this is the best part. So our bishop's wife, her maiden name is Hinckley. Uh-huh. And so we were discussing this because we obviously have Levi Savage in our family. And then we also have John Linford on the other side of the family. Both were in the Martin Willie Hancock Company. Well, the Hinckleys came and rescued the Martin Willie Hancock Company. So they're rescuing Levi Savage.
So it's her duty.
That's what I told her. I said, it is your duty to come rescue me and help me with the women's pull. And you know what? She agreed with me. She's like, oh yeah, I'll help you with the women's pull.
That's awesome.
I'm looking for more victims.
That's hilarious.
Okay. All right. Now let's move on to stories.
All right. So Mormon news stories, Mormons in the news. What do you have first? We have a follow-up first.
We do. We've got a follow-up.
To the DNA.
Yes.
The last DNA thing.
Yes.
You know, our obsession with the DNA kit.
We are so obsessed with DNA.
And we talked last time about the Golden State murder.
Golden State killer.
And how they caught him through DNA.
Yes.
And we mentioned it even though there wasn't a Mormon connection.
Yes.
Just because we thought it was fascinating because it was DNA. And then you discovered there is a Mormon connection. You saw an article.
Exactly. There is a Mormon connection.
So what is the Mormon connection?
So we knew last time that they had used DNA and they had done some sort of a genealogical family search sort of a thing. Uh-huh. But we didn't know what the specific details of it. We just kind of theorized what if there was a Mormon connection.
Right.
So come to find out, and I have to put my glasses on, there is a woman in Rexburg who is an avid genealogist. Now, it does not say that she's Mormon, but she lives in Rexburg and she's an avid genealogist.
Uh-huh.
You don't have to do the math on
right.
that. Anyway, she took her dad's DNA and apparently she unwittingly helped investigators find that distant cousin who is Joseph DeAngelo, who is suspected of killing the 11 people. So she had her dad's DNA and she had uploaded it to a site where after you get your DNA results, you can upload it to that site. And so that if other people can upload their DNA and you can see if you match and connect family lines and everything. So she had done that with this DNA sample from her father. And what had happened is the FBI had uploaded the suspected killer's DNA. They hit this match with her father. So then they start investigating her father, thinking her father might be the killer. But they even took his DNA, another DNA sample from him. They got a court order, but he wasn't the killer. But they were then able to know that somewhere along the line, these two are related. So then the FBI.
So then they start looking at his family tree.
Yes. They enlist a genealogist to help them look at his family tree. And then they make this connection. So, very interesting. And I have to show you. Look what my kids bought me for Mother's Day. Yes, folks, this is the 23andMe DNA kit because they know we are so obsessed with the DNA.
Now, this is exciting.
I was going to do this kit online. Live tonight.
Right.
But I decided against it. And I'll explain why.
Yes.
So she
opened it up a few minutes ago.
You open up the kit and it's, hi, let's get started. And then you pull it out and I'll pull it out here. And what this kit is, this isn't the swab. This is the thing where you have to spit into the tube. And do you see that line right there? I don't know if you could see that line. Anyway, it's probably like a good, 2 inches of spit that I have to get into this too.
That's at least an inch. An inch of spit.
Yeah.
That's
and so I decided, y'all probably don't want to sit here and listen to me spit for several minutes that it's going to take to fill up the tube.
I don't either.
But what I am going to do is I am going to take it in the next 2 or 3 days. And then maybe by the time we podcast next time, I will have the results back.
You'll have to report back. Maybe we'll find a long lost relative.
Maybe
we'll find a half sibling.
A half sibling. I kind of doubt that. Our parents were a little boring.
We probably shouldn't joke about that.
However, we could potentially find a niece or nephew, but that's another story entirely.
Oh, yeah. There's potential there.
Anyway.
Okay. Well, you have to report back on that.
So
too.
Yeah, so we will, I will report back on the DNA kit, which will kind of tell me, you know, where my peoples are from.
This is great because now I don't need to buy one. I can just look at your results.
Well, exactly, because you and I share the same parents. So theoretically, your DNA would be...
It's all about the same.
Pretty, very, very similar to mine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very exciting. Okay. So next thing we want to talk about in the news this past week of Watt, past couple weeks, is the Blacks and the Priesthood. And of course, the church did this big celebration last Friday, June 1st. Before that happened, about a week before that happened, there was just a really sad hoax that happened online. Yes. The church was meeting that week with they had a big meeting that week.
With the NAACP.
Yeah, I think they did.
Yeah. And this happened the same day as
it was the same day.
The meeting with the NAACP.
I think they planned it. So the person who did this hoax had a website very similar to the church's website. There was just a hyphen difference. And so it was LDS.org, but somewhere in there was a hyphen, which, who is in trouble for not buying that domain?
Right? Well, and not only that, like the individual who had put this faux fake site together had like
made done,
it looked
exactly
so realistic.
Like the church
it really
website.
Looked like the church website.
So what this person did, they had this fake website, looked just like the church website. And they, of course, put a public apology on the website written as if it were from the first presidency, signed by the first presidency and the prophet, apologizing for excluding blacks from having the priesthood many years ago. Yeah. And this apology sounded so legit. Did you hear it?
I did not
read it.
I caught snippets of it, but yeah. I did not actually read it.
It sounded like it really, the wording was very, like it sounded real.
That's what I understand.
It really sounded real. So of course, at first everybody thought this was real. Many people were very excited about this.
Oh yeah.
As you can imagine, many people have been waiting for years to see if this would happen. And the church has come very, very close. If you read the essays,
I've read the essays.
They pretty much acknowledge that the decision to exclude blacks did not necessarily, it wasn't a revelation from God. So they've come
kind of more a cultural sort of a thing.
They've come very close, but they haven't gone this far. And so people were so excited. And then it turns out it was a hoax. And it just brought up all kinds of emotions.
Yeah.
And I don't think you saw the video. Did you watch the video from Sisters in Zion?
I did not.
It was from, what's the name? Zandra, one of the sisters in Zion. And she had a video. I didn't watch all of it, but I watched a big chunk of it. It's like an hour long video.
Okay.
And it is so sad and so very raw and emotional. She's just in tears over this.
Wow.
Just how she woke up the morning. She saw the news notification. She was so excited.
She's excited.
She cried. She gave a prayer of thanksgiving, and then she found out it was fake, and she was just so upset about the emotions that this stirred up.
Oh.
And I just, it was a hard video to watch because she was so, so upset about it. And I just felt so bad for her. And there's so many people that felt the same. Anyway, it was a sad deal.
Well, and I think the gentleman who created this hoax, his intent was to kind of bring awareness that the church had never formally apologized, but it never dawned on him or occurred to him the emotional damage it could cause
some people. I think his goal was to maybe hurt the church, and he probably didn't realize that it would really hurt some individual members of the church. And I don't think that was his intent. But, it was a sad, sad deal. So that was about a week before the celebration. And then we had the celebration on Friday.
Yes.
So I did not watch it on Friday, but I watched a big chunk of it on Sunday, and I watched a little bit more. I'm watching it in pieces.
Okay.
I haven't made it all the way through.
I have not watched it yet.
But on Sunday, I came downstairs after having a nap, and my husband was already two-thirds of the way through. So I saw the last third of it, and then I went back later and watched Elder Oaks talk. Elder Oaks was the main speaker.
Yes.
And so I thought it was just, from what I had seen, a great production, great celebration. They had, of course, Gladys Knight and her choir.
and I understand it. It was, you know, I mean, traditionally, you know, when you go to, we have kind of solemn church services. Yeah. Yeah. You know, we have very reverent church services. Uh-huh. And my understanding of this was there was some gospel music going on.
People in the conference center were clapping.
Yeah. It was very out of the norm for a Mormon service.
It was. And I thought it was great.
Which is great.
I loved it. It was just great. And it was such a celebration of what had happened. And they shared a lot of personal stories. They had actual families that shared their experiences and their testimonies and their stories of this and what an amazing event
it was. The impact
it
made on them.
And they really tried to keep it positive. They didn't focus on the history behind it. It was really more of a focus on a celebration that this
has happened
and a celebration of how far we've come. And so they had they had the most darling family at the end that all sang together and gorgeous voices. And they brought up all their, it was like a parent and their adult children. And then at the end, they brought in the grandchildren. And I was just like in tears by that point, the little grandkids, and they were all singing kind of a melody of different church songs.
Oh,
and
that's cool.
They just had gorgeous voices, and it was wonderful. And the gospel choir was great. And Elder Oaks gave a great message. He talked in his message about remembering where he was on the day that the revelation came, similar to the way we remember where we were, you know, on 9/11 or JFK. He related that he remembered where he was and going to tell his sons, who were, sounds like probably teenage sons, and being very excited to share the news with them.
Well, I think he said he was out in his yard working?
I think he was at his cabin. They had like a property or a cabin somewhere. And he said he knew it was a big deal if someone was calling him on that phone because
nobody called on the cabin.
He didn't give that number to a lot of people.
Well, and he was president of BYU at the time.
Yeah.
So this would be information he would need to know.
Right. So he just talks about what a happy day it was. He didn't go so far as to apologize in his talk, which I don't think we probably expected.
Yeah, no.
But I'm sure a lot of people thought would be nice. Yeah. but he really kind of focused on moving forward. And he acknowledged that even after the revelation happened, there has still been racism in the church.
And that some people have even left over the revelation.
Right. So. And so he, you know, kind of encouraged, if there's any of that racism existing, we need to wipe it out. Yeah. We need to not be that way.
Yeah.
And we need to move forward and be inclusive. And so it was a good message. So,
well, you know, one of the things that I thought was interesting in his talk, you know, was when he talked about, you know, again, the impact. I mean, obviously this had impact on the members of the church who could now receive the priesthood that could not previously receive the priesthood, but just the personal impact on him and remembering that, because I remember that. I was not very old when this revelation came out. I was only 10 and a half. So I didn't really understand. I mean, obviously I didn't understand the history. I didn't understand where the church had been on this issue. I just so specifically remember how awestruck our parents were. So you weren't born yet.
No, I wasn't born yet.
You weren't born yet, but our parents were just awestruck.
So you remember them telling you?
Well, not only do I remember them telling me, it was on the national news. And I remember them flipping on the channels on the national news. And first of all, Mormons in the 70s were never on the national news. So it was a really big deal, you know, if you had a Mormon story on the national news. So I definitely remember that. But I remember, I think our dad had heard about it first, and he was at work, and he had called our mom. And I just remember them just, you know, just very kind of serious about it. Serious that they were upset about the change, but just kind of just blown away that it had happened.
Right.
And it's a very impressionable memory for me from my childhood. And then recently I was sorting through a bunch of a box that had our father's old stuff in it. And he was a bishop at the time. And so he received a letter from the First Presidency saying, you know, this is our new policy. And he had saved this letter in the box of stuff that I had. So,
which is so interesting that he saved it. It shows you how important it was.
Yeah. So I loaded it up to the memory feature of Family Search so that myself and future generations can look at the letter he was sent for years and years.
Right. All right. Right. Anyways, it was great. If anybody wants to go back, it's still online. You can find it on YouTube, BYU TV YouTube channel, or LDS, Mormon.org YouTube channel.
Yeah.
If you want to go back and watch it. I thought it was a great celebration.
It's a good Sunday activity. Mm-hmm. You know what? On Sunday afternoon, have my kids sit down and watch that because that'd be a perfect Sunday activity.
I know. I'd like to watch it with my kids. Our kids were not really in the room when we had it on Sunday. I think it would be a great one to watch with kids and have a discussion.
Yeah.
So.
Well, speaking of Sunday activities, this last Sunday, President Nelson and his wife held a youth broadcast. And this was a broadcast that was to all the youth between the ages of 12 and 18 within the church.
I keep hearing about this. I didn't watch it, but you went with your kids, or watched it with your kids.
We went with our kids. Mm-hmm. So for some reason, I don't know how we ended up with this, but we got the chapel in our building. A lot of people were just meeting in homes and things like that. But we had the chapel. And so,
like for your ward.
For our ward.
Okay.
So they encouraged the youth and their parents to come. Mm-hmm. And of course, they, you know, showed it on the big screen in the chapel. And President Nelson, man, he is just shaking it up. Mm-hmm. So what he talked about is he's talked about, you know, we are in the latter days and we are in the latter of the latter days.
Right.
And being in the latter of the latter days, that he's really focused on the gathering of Israel and that Israel needs to be gathered. And he's telling the youth, you need to do it. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing that when he talked about the gathering of Israel is he said, now I'm not talking about the gathering just here in the world. I'm talking about the gathering both here in the world and those spirits who have passed on. And when you think about that, you know, when you go and do temple work for those who have passed on, that literally is a form of gathering of Israel, as well as, you know, sharing the gospel. So what he did is he encouraged the youth. He gave them several points. Now, the first point that he gave them is the one that he spent the longest time on, is he said that he wants to discourage or disengage from a constant reliance on social media.
Okay, this is the one I keep hearing about.
Yes.
It's all the buzz.
People, this is all the buzz.
People are giving it up this week.
People are giving it up. So he said to the youth, he says, a 7-day fast from social media. And, of course, he encouraged anybody else who wants to fast from social media that that would be good for them, too. So,
which obviously you're not participating in.
Well, not yet.
Yes.
So, I admit I am like the biggest social media junkie. I am like a huge Facebook and Instagram fan. I know I spend way more time on that than I need to. Mm-hmm. And as I said, one of the things that we have to give up for Trek is we have to do a sacrifice. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to do a twofer here. I am going to give up the social media for 7 days, and then I can also count it as my sacrifice for Trek. And so
good timing.
And so I thought, well, I really can't start on Monday because I knew we were going to record this week and we record on Facebook. But what I did do is, you know, usually what I do is first thing when my alarm goes off in the morning, you know, I give myself a few minutes to wake up and first thing I do is flip on Facebook and, oh, what are my friends saying? And so I decided, you know what, I'm not going to do that. And so I didn't do it yesterday morning and I didn't do it today. And the same thing at my office. I was like, okay, I'm not going to do any social media while I'm at my office. You know, I may have a few minutes here and there and I'll hop on social media and, you know, all of a sudden it's 20 minutes later. So anyway, so it's really made me really consciously aware of how much time I spend on social media.
Yeah.
But yes, I am going to participate in the 7-day fast once we get this podcast over with. So
good. That's awesome.
The other things that he said is he said, make a weekly sacrifice of time to the Lord for 3 weeks in a row. And he didn't give any specifics. You know, he said, just make a weekly sacrifice of time, you know, and that can be anything from, you know, spending 10 minutes indexing to going and helping a neighbor to, you know, just just anything that is a sacrifice of your time and serves the Lord. You know, maybe it's even going with your family to clean the building, maybe going to the temple to do baptisms. So the third thing he said is, he said, do a thorough life assessment with the Lord, perhaps with parents and a bishop, and ensure an individual is firmly planted on the covenant path. Again, this is wise advice, whether you're an adult or whether you're a kid. You know, where am I, and am I on the covenant path?
Right.
Number four, he said, pray daily that all God's children might receive the blessings of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that's a very specific prayer that he's asking for, asking the youth to say, is that when they pray, when they say their prayers every day, that they ask, you know, Lord, please allow all of the children to receive the blessings of the gospel. And then the fifth thing that he says is, he says, stand out and be different from the world. And he says, the Lord needs you to look like, sound like, act like, and dress like a true disciple of Jesus Christ. So he says, you know, you're living in the world, but you have very different standards. And then, of course, he takes the Strength of Youth booklet, mm-hmm. and he says, I want you to study this booklet. I want you to study it regularly. And then he says, and take extra copies of this booklet and pray about who you can give it to.
Oh.
Who can you give it to?
That's a new one.
I know, that might need this in their mm-hmm. life. And so we had after the meeting was over with, we had a whole box of booklets that our ward had ordered that they were encouraging the youth to take.
They were ready for this.
They were ready for this.
They must have had some warning.
Well, the other thing too is they encouraged the youth to bring their strength for the youth booklet. So Katie, of course, is my youngest. She doesn't have one. Mm-hmm. We took her because we didn't want to leave her at home, and she's a year away from being in Young Women's. So my four other kids, out of those four other kids, only one of those kids could find their Strength of Youth booklet. They all have them.
Oh, it's the same as like the Personal Progress book.
Exactly.
The Faith in God book. At any given time, nobody knows where it is.
Exactly.
But it's somewhere in the house.
So I think it's kind of like scissors. You know how you buy like multiple pairs of scissors because you can never find a pair of scissors? Parents, just go out there and buy like 12 copies of Strength of Youth.
Just put one in every room.
Put one in every room. So there's never an excuse. Anyway, I think that's a great challenge to mm-hmm. the youth. And I especially think it's a good challenge at the beginning of summer.
Yeah.
When they may be more apt to spend a lot of time on that's social true. Media. And if they kind of maybe get in the habit of giving up some time to the Lord, probably a productive way to spend your summer.
Right. They've got a little extra time
They've
to give up.
They've got some extra time.
So. That's great. That's awesome. I should go back and listen to it. I love him. He is on fire.
Oh, he is so on fire.
He was great at the B1 event too. He gave the closing remarks at the end, and he's just great.
I know.
Just so personal.
Very personable.
Yeah, and witty
And he, it's like, you know, I mean, to me, it's kind of like he's been sitting in the back for a few years, just taking notes and making a list and saying, when it's my turn, here's what we're going to do. And he's just going through like a bucket list, checking them off. We did that one. Check it off.
Well, and I keep telling my husband, I don't remember him being so witty in his conference remarks.
No.
It's like somebody gave him permission to like, you can say what you want now.
You're the prophet. You can say what you want.
I don't know.
You're only tempered by the Lord.
he's wonderful.
Yes.
So it's been fun to see him in action.
It has been.
So let's see. What's our next? Oh, this is a quick little mention we wanted to give.
Yes.
There was an announcement about a week or two ago that Brigham Young University, BYU, has announced that they are hiring the first female dean of the Marriott School of Business, which is pretty big.
That's
really big. I mean, are there female deans of any of the other colleges?
Oh, this is so awful. I have no idea.
I have no idea either.
But just the fact that, I mean, maybe you could see a female dean like in the education college.
Yeah, but you're right. They probably have.
You know, family science college.
Right, in the family sciences.
But the business school. The business college, that's big.
So this is big. So her name is, do you think you say that Bridget? It has two T's. I think it's Bridget.
Okay.
But it has two T's, so it almost looks like it should be Brigida or something.
Okay.
Bridget. Well, Bridget Madrian.
We'll say Bridget until we know otherwise.
Bridget Madrian is her name. She has an amazing resume, background. So she did go to BYU for undergrad and grad, and then she went to MIT and got her PhD in economics, and she is currently a professor at Harvard. So we looked her up because I was super curious. Like, it doesn't say anything in the announcement about whether she has kids or is married. And so I immediately was like, does she have children at home? And are they allowing her to have this job with children at home? I need to know.
We might
because that would be even bigger news.
We might have Facebook stalked
her. Yeah, we did. We totally
Facebook stalked her.
We must get to the bottom of this mystery. So
yes. We learned very interesting things by Facebook stalking her.
Okay, so she does have kids. Two daughters from what we can tell. And it looks like the youngest is graduating from high school this year. The oldest is 20-something.
Yes.
And she's married, has kids. She is a girl power kind of girl.
She is a girl power kind of girl.
So I'm excited about this.
I know. I know.
I think this could be nothing but good for BYU and the Marriott School.
She had a post on her Facebook that where she had, how people like post articles and stuff. She had a post on her Facebook talking about, gender inequality in the Olympics. Uh-huh. And this is not to say that, she's going to go out there and, be what some people refer to as, a raging feminist and everything needs to be equal and, mm-hmm. give the women the priesthood. I don't see that at all.
No.
But what I do see her being aware of is many of the gender inequalities that still exist.
Yeah.
And especially in the business world. And maybe doing something to make a little bit of impact in that gender inequality.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So from what we can tell, we like her. We think this is great news. So I think it's
fabulous. She's, very, very, very well educated, smart woman. Mm-hmm. Clearly is qualified for this position.
Yeah.
And so we say, go Bridget.
Yes, you go. We can't wait to see what you do at BYU.
Exactly.
So. All right, what's next?
Okay, another interesting story. And this one originated with Mormon leaks. And Mormon leaks can be somewhat controversial. They tend to want to leak stuff that embarrasses the church. But this, it was leaked by Mormon leaks, and then it got picked up by the local media down in Salt Lake. And what it is Mormon leaks had found information, released information that connects the church with 13 LLC companies that collectively owned stock at the end of 2017 that had a collective value of over $32 billion, almost $33 billion. And they found that each of these 13 companies have domains that are hosted by LDS church servers mm-hmm. that also host LDS.org and Mormon.org. All of them were registered on July 21st, 2016. They all have these managers, and these managers were all employees of the church. They could only get one manager to talk, and that one manager admitted that she was a manager for the company but would not say anything else. They got two other managers to talk, but they denied any connection and wouldn't answer any questions. Of course, the church has remained silent on this, and the church just says that we have all sorts of resources, and there are funds that are added to church reserves, which include stocks and bonds and taxable mm-hmm. businesses, agriculture interests, etc.
Right.
And I think we've all known for years, obviously the church is very diversified in their portfolio.
Right.
Which any good financial manager is going to say, diversify your portfolio. Don't put all of your stocks into one, or put all of your nest egg into, one investment. There are many wealthy people who end up paying their tithing with stocks that they sign over to the church. So again, they're going to have companies that manage these stocks, because the church then has to decide, are they going to keep this stock as an investment? Are they going to sell off the stock? So again, not too unusual. So there was nothing about this that was of particular concern to me. But what I did find hilarious was some of the comments on the internet.
Were people raging over it?
People were raging over it. People were saying, a few years ago, the church fired all their janitors and they're making the people clean the church.
Oh, the church cleaning.
And they did this to save money. And clearly they've got $32 billion stuffed away in stocks. They don't need to save money.
Right. See, it's all in the way it's presented.
True.
It was never presented to me in whatever congregation I was in when they did that as a money saving thing. No. It was presented as a, you need to serve and do your part kind of thing.
Yeah.
This is for you, not for, for us. Now, some people would say, well, that's the spin. But.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? And one of the reasons that they talked about that, you know, that the church talked about church cleaning initially was, you know, they wanted the members to take some pride in the buildings.
And take care of the building, which I totally get.
I totally get, too. How much more do your children appreciate something when you force them to take care of it?
Yeah.
They're a little more appreciative of it. So, you know, I think that, you know, that doesn't bother me. You know, another kind of chatter that I heard is, well, of course they have all this money because they make the old people go out and they call them missionaries, but they're actually running farms and businesses and things like that. And they do that for free. And so the church doesn't have to pay them. Again, these types of comments bother me. And this is why these types of comments bother me, because I think there are two types of resources. There's a money resource and there's a time resource. Mm-hmm. Some people have a lot of money. Some people have a lot of time.
Right.
And if I don't have a lot of money and I want to be able to donate to my church and serve my church, you know, if I don't have a lot of money to donate, but I've got time and I've got skills and I want to voluntarily go out there and use those time and skills to better the church, nope. As far as I know, no older missionaries have ever been forced to go on a mission.
Right.
It's been totally a voluntary thing.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of bothered by the comments that kind of slammed some of the older missionaries who go out there, because I have known a lot of older missionaries who go out there and they really do go out there because they have a desire to serve.
Right.
And this is what they can contribute. And if it happens to save the church money so those resources can be invested to make even more money for other purposes that the church has, so be it.
Right. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting, like, I think it's good that our tithing money is being invested to make more money. Like, that's smart, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Well, and I don't know if it's tithing money. I mean, we don't know. Like I said, some people do pay their tithing, you know, in stocks, but you know, whether it's tithing money or, you know, whether it's, you know, money that's being reinvested from other businesses, you know, the same thing holds true. You know, the church uses it for humanitarian purposes. They use it for missionary work. They use it to build buildings and temples and do a lot of good.
Right.
So.
Right. Very interesting.
Yes.
Mormon leaks.
Mormon leaks.
Okay. Next one I have, we don't have a lot of time, so I'm not really going to go through the whole thing, but there was a great, New York Times opinion piece a couple week or two ago, probably about 2 weeks ago. And the title was "What Islamophobic Politicians Can Learn from Mormons." And it was just an interesting opinion piece on how, Utah being such a red state is still so welcoming to refugees and to people of other religions, to particularly to Islam, and there's not some of the hatred towards that religion that comes from other states. And they talked about certain other politicians from other states that have really done some crazy things. One of them from Nebraska proposed that Muslims be required to eat pork if they wanted to come to the United States.
Oh my gosh.
Like, this is happening? Anyway, it was a great just kind of opinion piece on how some of these extreme politicians could learn from the state of Utah and the politicians in Utah. Even though it's a very red state, they're very welcoming, very open, and because relating it back to because of our Mormon history, maybe they're more accommodating of other religions.
Well, so I think that's exactly what it is. You know, the history of the LDS Church is we have been persecuted since day one. We've been a persecuted people. And granted, the persecution we experience today is, you know, nothing like the early saints did. But I think that it causes us to have empathy and we can really relate to other religions that face that same persecution just based on how they want to live their religion.
Right. So. Right. Or a couple people that are a few bad apples. which exactly. we often experience in our religion.
Oh, yes, we do.
We also do not like to be judged for the mistakes of a couple of crazies.
True, true. So, all right, I will end with the last story super quick. Many of you have heard of a gentleman by the name of Brooke Hales. He is the secretary to the governing first presidency. We know of no direct relation to him. I mean, Hales is our maiden name, but all Hales in the church are related. So, you know, probably 7 or 8 generations ago, we probably share some sort of a common grandfather.
Probably.
But, apparently they were down 170. They only had 69. They didn't have 70.
I didn't
or however
even,
many they have in a quorum. I don't
I
know how many they have in a quorum.
This. Did you realize
so,
this?
I did not realize this.
So I thought they took care of it all at conference.
Somehow or another, they were down to 70. And so they decided, well, we got to have another 70. So what did they do? They just turned to Brother Hales and said, Brother Hales, how'd you like to be a 70? So there's a really funny kind of commentary that that's on the This Week in Mormons Facebook page where they have President Eyring saying, "Hey, President," and he says, "Yes, Hal. Hey, we need another 70." And then then you have President Nelson turning to him, going, "Hey, you in the corner taking notes." So, congratulations to him.
That's
new
funny.
Church calling.
That's awesome.
All right.
I guess that's about it for news stories.
And that's about it for news stories. We need to move on to our favorite things.
Favorite thing. Go first.
Okay, you go first.
I brought it so those on Facebook Live can see it. My favorite thing one is a cleaning product. And it is not that I like to clean. Lest you think I'm like this clean freak, I'm not.
She's not.
The fact is, I do not like to clean, which is why I'm like all about finding these cleaning products that make it easier and less painful for me.
Well, the fact is, first of all, you do not like to clean, and you have 4 children under the age of 11.
Yes. So this product is a spray. It's called Folex Instant Carpet Spot Remover.
Yes.
My mother-in-law told me about this a couple years ago. She brought me a bottle when she was here. Probably for the last baby we had about it, but she found it somewhere. And this stuff is amazing. I do not just use it on carpets. It stains out of clothing.
Oh.
Like this is what I use now for stains on my clothes.
Really?
But I also use it on carpets. I've used it on couches. I'm going to give you a list of the things I have used this on in the past like 3 weeks.
Okay.
Since baby was born. Okay. And it has removed every single one of these things. Like you would never know this happened in my house. Blood. Throw up, spit up. Those are two different from two different children. Poop, chocolate, and just all the other food stains.
Oh
but yeah, those are all things I've used this on within the past 2 or 3 weeks. So this stuff, I love it. It's amazing. Folex carpet spot remover.
Well, and I have to say, you can find it on Amazon, but I also saw it at the Home Depot.
Yeah, I think they have it at Home Depot now.
They do. They have it at Home Depot. And I don't know if you can buy it in the spray bottles at Home Depot, but I definitely saw it in the convenient gallon size at Home Depot.
Oh, well, that's what I need to go get.
I'm going to suggest to you, Ariane.
I go through it.
You might need the gallon size.
Yeah, I might.
Either the gallon size or fewer children.
Oh, marker. It's also taken marker off my floor in the past week.
Oh, gosh.
So, marker on the carpet, red marker. Yeah, we've had a month here. So, all right, go ahead. What's your favorite thing?
I don't even know if I can get to it now because I'm laughing so hard about all of your mishaps of your children.
I know.
Okay, let's center. Okay, so my favorite thing this week is a podcast.
Oh.
And this, now I love a good true crime podcast.
Oh, yes, me too.
That's just the attorney in me who wants to put puzzle pieces together and things like this. So this is, I mean, it's kind of a true crime podcast, but it's a little different than your typical true crime mm-hmm. podcast. Most true crime podcasts are stories you've never even heard of before. And so that's kind of fascinating too, is just to hear the story. This is a new podcast that is done by People Magazine mm-hmm. and it is called Cover Up.
Okay.
And at least for this particular season, they are focusing on Chappaquiddick and Ted Kennedy.
Ooh.
Which happened.
I just saw that movie.
And I have not seen the movie yet. I want to see the movie.
It's a good movie.
In fact, I was going to look the other day and see if it was in the Dollar Theater yet. Because I might just take myself to the movie if it's there yet. Uh-huh. Anyway, they had a reporter that, you know, did kind of the year-long investigation thing. There's only been one episode released so far. And the first episode released just talks about the hours immediately after the accident.
Okay.
And the what it looked like when the people came up on the accident scene. Different people's versions of what they saw at the accident scene. And I did not realize this until I was listening to this podcast. The accident happened either the day of or within a day or two of the man landing on the moon in July of 1969.
Oh. So right. They did. I think they put a little bit of that in the movie.
Yeah. So, you know, the whole world was focused on this man landing in the moon.
Right.
And then, of course, the focus shifted to Ted Kennedy and Chappaquiddick. But, and the media descended. In fact, one of the initial people on the scene, when they realized it was Senator Kennedy's car, just was like, oh man. They just knew that the media and the world was just going to descend upon them. So, you know, I don't know what the final analysis will be in the end, but I really did enjoy episode number one.
So the whole season will be on Chappaquiddick.
Chappaquiddick. This is the first time people has done this. They've decided to get on the podcasting bandwagon with a lot of other out there, especially doing true crime stuff. And I think that all originated with the one that NPR did.
Oh, the Serial.
The Serial, which NPR did.
So what's it called again?
It's called Cover Up.
Cover Up. Okay.
Cover Up.
All right. I'll have to check it out.
You will have to check it out. And the other thing that's nice about it too is a lot of these true crime podcasts will have some pretty gritty words in them. The language in this was, I can't even remember if I even heard any language. If there was any language, it was very, very mild.
Oh, that's nice.
So, yep.
Car friendly. When you
car children. Car friendly when you have children.
Children's in the car.
Exactly.
Okay.
All right. Okay. I think that wraps it up for us.
I think that's it. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much. And those of us who have followed us on Facebook Live tonight, thank you for following us. Yes. And I know that it will be up on Facebook. And if you want to watch us on Facebook, you can catch the replay on Facebook. And of course, Jeff will get the podcast up to all of the podcast sources probably Thursday, I would suspect, if not tomorrow night.
A day or two.
And so you can find us, of course, on Apple and everywhere else.
Yeah, and be sure to follow all the social media for This Week in Mormons. And we also have a Twin Sisters
Instagram account.
And be sure to connect there. Keep up on all the stories. And we'll see you next time.
Okay.
Thanks for listening.
All right. Good night, Twim Nation.
Bye.
Bye.